Small wonder, was a show. This baffling piece of pop culture refuse miraculously aired for 4 seasons. It centered around the wacky hijinks of a scientist, his family, and the weird robot child he created for reasons. Join Bryn, Aaron, and Barry as they perform their own experiments into this thankfully Matt LeBlanc-free bit of sci-fi comedic nonsense.
Cold open. We grew up during peak sitcom, Seinfeld, Friends, The Fresh Prince, but those shows were diamonds in the rough. This podcast is not about those diamonds. It's about the rough. Some sitcoms were briefly popular in their time. Some were canceled almost immediately. You probably won't recognize most of these, and you'll ask, that was a show?
That was a show?
The podcast about failed or forgotten sitcoms from the 80s and 90s, starring
Bryn Burney,
Aaron Yeager,
and Andrew Helmer as Barry.
A Radio Gizmo production.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Oh, you know, recording a podcast episode.
Oh, what is it? What are we doing?
I think we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, oh, okay. Aaron, you know, that thing we do every other week.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
That thing that, you know, you started.
Oh.
Do you ever just listen to other podcasts and you listen to their preambles and you're just like, man, you guys are really good at the preamble. We just flounder our way until somebody's like, so what did we watch this week?
But usually the podcasts with amazing preamble are people who have like a decade or two of improv comedy experience.
True story.
So I think given our skill sets and backgrounds, we do okay.
Yeah, we do just fine. Let's be kind to ourselves today.
Oh, yeah. We're easily a 7 out of 10. I mean,
which is fine.
So, we watched, what did we watch this week, guys?
Well, we watched Small Wonder.
That we did. I like how I asked it, even though it was like, I picked it, but yeah. Like, I was just like, what do we do?
It's a small wonder I made it through both episodes that we watched.
Yeah, it's a small wonder that this show was on for 4 seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we should bury the lead on that like we usually do. This show is in the forgotten category, but not the failed category. Because like you said, it went on for 4 seasons. And according to Wikipedia, and I refuse to do any deeper research than that, it was translated into several languages and played in like 70 countries.
Yeah,
it certainly did. But I mean, let's not be small. In our definition of the word failure, because while the show might have been a perhaps financial success, it is a failure on many other levels.
You know, you can sort of put it in a similar category to Out of This World, in that it just sort of went on and on and on for a few seasons, and with like kind of a weird thin high concept premise, and you know, people liked it. And like, I think the thing with this show is that people do talk about how campy and weird and, you know, frankly bad it is.
Now, before we get into the specifics of of that, maybe we should introduce the show a little bit.
Yeah, Barry. Talk about this.
Let's do our thing. So Small Wonder was a 1985 sitcom. Basically, I'll just describe the pilot because that pretty much just kind of takes care of what the show is. The pilot sets the stage pretty handily. You know, we've got little Jamie Lawson. He wants somebody to play with. His mother, Joan, wants her husband to be around more. And the family patriarch, Ted, he just wants to be appreciated at work. So the solution to all of this presents itself in Ted's latest creation. A robot child he's been working on in secret. It's a tale as old as time. Vicky, Ted's voice input child indicate, quickly blends into the family, and pretty soon Ted and Joan have a new daughter to love, and Jamie has a new sister to bond with. Just fucking kidding. Instead, the family treat Vicky like an oddity at best and a servant at worst. At no point does this family ever treat this newcomer as anything but a fancy possession. It is super weird. The show's primary focus appears to be on professional G-Wizster Jamie and his childish shenanigans, as well as his hatred of his neighbor Harriet, whose only crime seems to be wanting to be Jamie's friend. And also just being utterly terrifying. The show lasted for 6 episodes. Wait, no, I'm sorry, 96 episodes. That's small wonder. We watched 2 episodes. We watched the pilot, which was essentially what I just described. And we also watched one more episode of season 1, episode 22. So yeah, that was that's small wonder.
That's a good rundown. I find this show profoundly off-putting. This show made me viscerally uncomfortable to watch. I'm not going to say it's the worst show we've reviewed because, you know, it's hard to go back in my memory banks and do all of those comparisons. But just in terms of comfort level watching it, this is the most uncomfortable I have been watching one of these shows.
There are so many moments in this where I was uncomfortable. And I couldn't ever put my finger on why.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, I don't know why this is bothering me, but it is.
Yeah.
I guess a big part of it might just be that, you know, the robot child, Vicky, is supremely off-putting. I mean, she is exactly, you know, like a child's idea of what a robot is. You know, she talks like this. And everything. And that's pretty much the show's like primary joke.
Yeah. I mean, I had a similar reaction. I was deeply uncomfortable as well, but I couldn't really verbalize like what it was exactly. And I do think it does boil down to how Vicky is presented, at least in season one. Like we didn't go any further than that. Apparently, when you read about the show, they make her take on more human qualities as the show progresses. And, you know, it's also the way that they explained away her puberty and growing is that she somehow becomes more human and thus grows.
Upgrades.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. But yeah, I definitely think that Tiffany Brissett, who plays Vicky, is a really talented kid, like was like a very, very talented actor and was just doing what she was told. But the result, sadly, is like, you know, she has like very dead eyes and like very like
she's terrified.
Yeah, to make this clear to the audience, because there were shows at that time that might have used like some sort of animatronic robot or something. But this was a human actress.
Yeah.
Like a 10 or 11 year old girl playing this character.
Yeah.
But they like, I don't know, gave her a wardrobe where on her back there's like a circuit board type of thing.
I hated seeing her circuit board.
I hated it too. Yeah. My favorite thing about it was like every time they cut to it, I don't know if you ever noticed, but it was a still image.
Yes.
Like they didn't
notice that.
I was like, you guys, you didn't want to like, you could have cut away to like a little prosthetic back, you know, with circuits and stuff. And they're like, no. A still image will be fine.
It's really bizarre because the dad, Ted, who built this robot, he like unzips the like back of her shirt to reveal this circuit board. Ugh. And then you clearly see the video image freeze frame and his hands freeze frame, but his hands are still in the picture. It's still in frame and they freeze and then the lights on the circuit board blink, which is obviously like an effect they added in post, but could not be bothered to rotoscope the effect in with his hands still moving.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's like a video someone made in high school. Like just God.
As filmmakers who've worked in various budgets, but nowhere close to network TV budget, there are so many other ways to shoot this.
Yes. Yeah. There's no excuse for this level of tattered cheapness on a network television show.
Yeah, it's just it's a real shoddy production. Yeah. You know, I have a feeling I could feel Mr. Producer's hands all over this
one. Yeah.
It really made the sort of outline, the 2D outline of a dad on Out of This World look like, yes, you know, something out of 2021. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a question I'd like to pose to you guys, because I just kind of kept coming back to the same thing. Who did you hate more? Like, I found like so many moments where I hated every character just a little bit more than the others. And I was, equal opportunity hatred in this one. Like, I hated Jamie. I hated Ted. I hated Joan. And I hated Vicky.
Yeah.
Fascinating question, I have to admit, because my mind also cycled through those feelings. If I had to pick Ted,
Ted's a real, like, Dr. Frankenstein.
He's
like,
a real
he has no work.
He has a god complex.
God complex, has no concept of the monster he's putting out into the world, nor does he care to face any consequences for his actions.
And a real punchable face.
Yeah.
Real punchable face. Yeah. Giggles a lot, an awful lot for a grown man.
Yeah. I mean, hate is such a strong word. I'm going to say I was really uncomfortable. Like, I was just, everyone made me feel really alienated. I felt like as alienated as probably, you know, if Vicky could have human feelings, which apparently she couldn't. Like, if she did have human feelings, she would feel alienated by that family. That's how I felt watching the show.
Oh, yeah.
Every time they put her in a closet, I was like,
"Oh my god, yeah!" And there's like a promo still that I found floating around online where it was literally just, and this is going on our Instagram, so everyone keep a lookout for this. But like Vicky and the two parents. I don't even know what their names are at this point. Ted and Joan. Ted and Joan. Okay, in Vicky's outfit, in her little red and white, like, outfit, and they're all in the closet together with a dead face, like, with just, like, the, like, robot face, and I was like, what exactly is happening here? It's very haunting. The whole thing is, I feel like it is definitely the product of a lot of cocaine. Like the whole show had to have been. It truly had to have been. It was 85. Yeah. So, you know, what else do we think was going
early
on?
Early in the pilot, there's a line of dialogue from Ted where he's justifying why he started this project at work to build a humanoid robot that responds to voice commands. And his justification seems like it's pulled from probably like a popular science magazine of the time. Like, it's a perfectly reasonable justification that this robot could be used in a caregiver capacity or to help with, life-saving care. And like, his justifications are all sort of like reasonable reasons why a company might produce a humanoid robot. But at no point in that little speech, in that little soliloquy, does he justify why this robot is a 10-year-old girl?
Yeah.
There's all of the reasons.
That's very troubling to me.
Yeah, all the reasons. Like,
why give it a gender?
Yeah, exactly.
Why give it a gender? And if this robot is being built for the purposes that he describes, why make it a child?
Yeah.
Why not a non-gendered adult? Like, it.
Yeah.
So it's like a super strong, like they do all these effects where she can like pick up heavy objects
and smash tables
and stuff. But she's like a petite 10-year-old girl. And it's like, why? What was the justification? It's
because it's kooky and it's funny seeing poorly done SFX of a girl throwing a man across the room, you know?
State of the art.
Yeah.
Spared no expense on those.
It establishes early on, especially through like Jamie, the son, through his response to her, that she is going to be seen as some sort of like servant slash maid in this household. And they immediately put like the dad, Jamie, like everyone in the family immediately puts her to work doing their chores.
And absolutely.
Her little dress looked kind of like some sort of like maid
outfit.
Yeah,
it's a red dress with a little white pinafore type deal. And yeah, it does look a little bit like a maid's outfit.
There's this really creepy terrifying moment where he's like introducing her to the family. And I'm going to say her, despite the fact that they refuse to acknowledge it as anything but it. Now he introduces Vicky to the family, and there's this really weird moment where he's like, "Do you like how she's dressed? I dressed her in a dress." And like, it's such a icky moment. Yeah. You're like, I don't.
Oh, and he sprayed her with perfume from his wife.
With his wife's perfume.
Yeah.
You know what? I think we're now deconstructing why we found this so uncomfortable to watch.
It's so loaded. It's so loaded in so many ways.
Also, something about this show, like visually and the soundtrack, has a kind of vibe. It's a throwback vibe that, like you said, the show was made in 85. But it feels like it exists in a world somewhere between the 50s and the 70s.
It's true. Yeah.
It definitely, like, you can feel the touch of, like, 50s or, you know, 50s and early 60s sitcom writers over it. Like, there was not a 20-year-old in that room.
Oh, no, like, absolutely not. And
there wasn't
and we'll
a 40-year-old in that room.
No, there wasn't. I mean, we'll get into it later with the spinoff, but it basically seems like everybody was on the verge of retirement, like, by the time they got this gig. Like, it's very... Yeah, it's all very odd and very old fashioned. And this was really evident in that second episode we watched.
Good God.
So the second episode we watched, just to give a quick summary, this man who's sort of like a vaudeville style performer shows up at their house and claims that Vicky is his long lost estranged daughter. That his former wife or partner gave up for adoption. And, you know,
leaving him because he's a deadbeat.
Because he's apparently a deadbeat. And like all he wanted to do is travel and get his big break as a performer, but it wasn't ever going to happen. But he couldn't give up on his dreams.
As a vaudeville performer in the mid-80s.
In the mid-80s.
This guy's a straight-up Simpsons character in live action.
Yeah. So anyway, so he shows up. And then that weird explanation, you're like, what the hell? How could he think that she's his daughter? And then Ted explains to Joan that he actually modeled Vicky's features after a child actor's photo that he saw.
A child model.
So it could have very well been this guy's actual like daughter that she looks exactly like. So anyway, so this guy shows up and he wants to bond with his estranged daughter, and like they go along with it. Like, it's really bizarre. Yeah.
They're afraid of like him exposing that she's a robot, which like, you know, like anybody who ever met her would probably deduce.
But
So
it turns out that Vicky, because she can do anything, she can basically do anything. She has like superpowers, and so she's sort of like directed to do a dance. And so she does this very impressive little tap dance, which is interesting because apparently the actress playing Vicky, Tiffany Brissett, was like a former child pageant star. So she had all these little skills, these little singing and dancing skills. So Vicky does, you know, very impressive little number, and her and this guy, and I don't even care to like look up the character's name because
I just was referring to him as Gil Gunderson from
So
his last name's O'Connor. I don't know his first name.
Okay, so they do this like little performance together. Because, you know, there's this whole conceit of there being like a big time agent there at the performance.
And at the school talent show.
I know.
Also features a full length 2-person production of Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
At the school talent show.
Yeah. Big time agent is going to be there.
Yeah.
He's got to impress the agent. So, it's so hard for a guy like him to get a meeting with an agent.
Yeah. So they do this little performance together, and Vicky ends up kind of stealing his thunder. You know, she basically steals all of his bits, like all of his punchlines, and delivers them. And he's like really offended by that. So he's like basically dying to get to know his daughter. But then once she starts stealing his bits, he's like over it.
Now, I do just want to say that was the one thing out of both episodes that I found mildly amusing. And when I say mild, I mean like ketchup. Mild. Like not an out loud laugh, but like mildly clever that Ted wants to like throw this guy off of their whole situation.
Yeah.
So he programs Vicky to like sabotage this vaudeville show. And the way that she sabotages it is, you know, you think it's going to be like, I don't know, smashing set pieces or like, you know, hiding in another, in a locked closet or something like that. But the way she sabotages it is that it's a classic, like funny man, straight man comedy duo performance. And he's supposed to be the funny one who delivers the punchlines, and she steals the punchlines.
Yeah.
Whereas in the rehearsal, she was supposed to be the straight man character.
Yeah.
That's the way it's sabotaged. So that is kind of like a mildly witty
idea. But their whole, I guess where I was going with all of this is their whole shtick together is very like old fashioned and very out of place in this like 19... 19-
It's a vaudeville act.
Yeah, it's like, it's very odd. So it just shows like what people were involved behind the scenes. It's like a bunch of like older folks. Who
Do
like,
either of you know when the creator of this show, Howard Leeds, was born?
No.
Okay. Quiz. Pop. My pop quiz. I looked it up. Guess when he was born?
1902.
Okay, that's too extreme. 1919.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So this is a very, you know, seasoned, if you will, writer.
Yeah. I mean, it is a gentleman who came of age in the, you know, pre-war era.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a gentleman who certainly sees no issue with anything going on in this.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, this is great. This is gold. Yeah. This is what I got into show business for.
With like, you know, all of the young girls who are in it are like offensive in different ways. Like poor
Vicky.
Like
Harriet? Can we talk about Harriet?
So Harriet, the main thing that offended me about Harriet was her hairstyle. Like, it's a literal bowl cut with like two long pigtails on the top of it. Like,
I was friends with a girl in grade school who was exactly like Harriet, hairstyle and everything. I love it.
Like,
looks more like a robot than Vicky does.
I agree with that. Like, and not to talk about like not to harp on it. It's not her appearance. It's like how they styled her. I felt bad, but for the way they styled her with that like hair and like the whole thing with her is that she only exists to be an antagonist to Jamie. And to, like, be a nosy neighbor trope. Like, I guess it's, like, they take the nosy neighbor trope to the next level in this because it's basically her, like, the entire family next door nosy.
Yeah. They're all so mean to her.
Yeah, they like, are. They're all really mean to her.
They slam the door in her face repeatedly. And there's a moment where, like, it's usually Jamie who, the kid who slams the door in her face. But there's one moment where, like, she comes to the door. And like Ted answers and you see him go to slam it and he stops himself. And I was just like, wow, this child is just being this family abuses this neighbor child, basically. Yeah, and she's done nothing wrong except for hilarious. She occasionally like the terrifying image of her like head poking through the back window occasionally got me because I was just like, what?
Why is she just spying on them? Why is she like stalking them?
She just like, wants to be friends with Jamie so much.
She's in love with him. She likes him. Like,
sure.
Yeah. It's like a whole, it's definitely a trope as well. Like the neighbor girl that the main boy of the sitcom doesn't like, but she's constantly chasing him and constantly trying to win his affections.
Yeah.
That's a trope. So I checked out this entry on tvtropes.org on this show, because of course a lot of people have written about this show. It's like one of the weirdest shows ever. They list all the tropes that exist in Small Wonder, and they describe this trope with Harriet as the abhorrent admirer. Like, what a terrible thing.
Yeah, that's terrible to say.
Some But, some great alliteration.
Yeah, yeah, but I know exactly what that's referring
yeah.
to
yeah.
when I hear that.
It's kind of like a Kimmy Gibbler type
trope. It's a Kimmy Gibbler, yeah. or if you want to gender swap it, it's an Urkel thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's Steve Urkel.
Now, like, I noted that the opening theme music of this reminded me of something from the era of, like, I Dream of Jeannie. Like, yeah. everything, and then it went on to have, like, dialogue and jokes and stuff that are very throwback, and especially for some reason... Jamie, the like 10-year-old boy, has I mean, yeah, it's nothing new to have like the kid who's like precocious and makes
oh man
like witty remarks like an adult, but they take it to such an awkward extreme with this character, and he's like making these snide remarks all the time. But one of them, it's like in that episode 22 where what is it, O'Connor and Vicky are demonstrating their little tap dancing comedy duo thing for the family who's watching their rehearsal. And the son is making these snide little remarks during the show. One of them is like, this guy couldn't get on the Gong Show. But after I'm listening to these remarks, I'm realizing like the kinds of jokes that O'Connor is making while tap dancing are no worse than the jokes in Small Wonder.
Yeah.
Like, it's very much on the same qualitative level.
Yeah.
The show within a show is no worse than the show.
Yeah, I don't... And the weird thing is, like, yeah, like, they comment that, like, oh, yeah, like, the jokes are bad, but you're like, I didn't realize that the act was supposed to be bad. I mean, it, like you said, it was just as bad as everything else, so...
Yeah, it didn't stand out as being bad enough compared yeah. to the world that it's situated in.
I love... that there's no concept of how adoption works in this show. Like, how, right. like, this guy shows up and he's like, I gotta see my kid. And you're like, well, for all you know, they legally adopted this child. That's not your call, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, you're already probably, like, breaking the law by showing up at their house, which must have required, like, some sort of stalking type of
yeah.
activity. I was so curious what other shows Howard Leeds worked on, and it kind of makes sense because he produced and wrote for the Brady Bunch and shows like Different Strokes, Facts of Life, Silver Spoons, and even Bewitched.
Oh, there you go.
So it all kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I read a fun tidbit, which was one of the child actors who was up for Jamie was little Seth Green.
I saw that too. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Funny.
Maybe he would have made the character more likable.
I mean, the kid that plays Jamie is just like, he's like such a great example of like just a show kid that's just too much at all times.
Yeah.
And like, like you're just like, you can just picture how annoying it would be to know this actor. Because you know, he would think he was like the absolute best because everybody was telling him he's the absolute best. You know, he's delivering all these huge, like, you know, like you said, the primary joke with Jamie is that he delivers like jokes above his age. And like, there's this one that really bothered me, and it was like right off the bat, and it's like Harriet comes over and like she go away, and then he's talking to his mom about her, and he's like, "What a waste of womanhood."
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And you're like, "What are you talking about?" That's a 9-year-old girl.
It's like the first scene.
Yeah,
it's we're off to the races from that joke.
It's, you know, and again, I can't stress this enough. I do not blame the three child actors that were in this. They were doing their job. They were very talented kids.
Very.
But, you know, the people behind the scenes wrote really terrible dialogue for them. That was like, they basically made three kids be trolls. Like they were like, especially Jamie, like his character was just a troll, you know?
Yeah, he's really mean. And he's like, really he's mean. Just like, he's got a real beggars can be choosers thing going on. Because you're like, she's the only child that talks to you, buddy. Like, go hang out with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. This show, the dialogue, it's like one big extension of Take My Wife, Please. It's like if someone wrote that on a napkin and said, this is the tone of the show.
This is like the mean-spirited tone of the show. And we have three cute kids who will never be the same after this because, you know.
Oh, yeah.
She's adults that are so generic that you will not even remember who they are.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What a show this was. I love watching the pilot because I was just like, who would ever watch this and be like, yeah, let's pick it up. Let's go four more seasons on this one.
Yeah.
It's baffling because it's just not good. It's just not well put together. It's just nothing.
The
you know?
Thing that I'm curious about is how, like, okay, so this show is basically as old as we are. And there are other shows from that era that were shown heavily in rotation of reruns that were from like throughout our childhood in the 90s. So we got exposed.
Growing Pains and stuff like that. You know, that was on. Yeah.
We got exposed to a lot of like mid 80s TV shows when we were kids, even though technically we were kind of too young to watch most of it.
Yeah.
But this show was not shown. Is it because people were too shell-shocked by it and they like hid it from our, like, they tried to erase it from history or something? Like,
yeah, maybe this got a little bit more syndication time outside of Canada.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Zero here.
Yeah.
Like, never heard of it. This is, you know.
Yeah, I had heard of it vaguely, but I would think, given my sensibility and given my commitment to all things pop culture, I would have heard more about it and it would have been more in my wheelhouse. But it just like didn't make it there. And I think that that's like, you know, I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that this is like my first real exposure to this show.
Yeah, me too. Because like going into it, didn't you assume, like at no point going into this did I assume that they were going to treat this kid like a robot? I assumed that, you know, she'd be a robot and like, you know, part of the family. No. I was ill prepared.
I was surprised that they did that electronic voice effect on her. I figured that maybe she would speak in some sort of halting manner. But like they actually put on like a voice effect like this.
No way, man. No, you are not giving that actress enough credit.
No, I'm not. That's all her.
That's all her, man. There's no modulation
going on. Let me clarify. I'm not saying that it's not her. I'm saying like that was the direction that she should sound like an electronic robot voice. Whereas I assumed that they would know that an audience would find it off-putting to listen to that for 100 episodes. So you would make her voice sound more natural.
Thing was a hit.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, just looping back to some of those visual effects things, like I would divide them into two categories. There's the like post-production effects that they did, like we described, where the video clearly freeze frames so that they can superimpose some blinky lights. The worst example of this was in the very beginning where she is first like Frankenstein's monstered into life, basically. And he's giving initial like commands with like a DOS prompt on a computer. And he just like types wiggle nose and it cuts to a close up of her face. And it's very obvious that it's a freeze frame and they used some sort of digital, like primitive digital effect to fake the wiggling of her nose. And it's like very obvious. And then
terrifying.
Later, there's a practical effect where, again, like she's being treated like some sort of household servant. They got her to repair some table and the dad like taps the top of the table to prove that it's like good as new, nice and sturdy. And then she repeats him because like the way they're establishing her character, she just like mirrors everything that happens in front of her. So she repeats what he says and she hits the top of the table and the table smashes. But when it cuts to the camera angle before she hits the table, you can clearly see the slant, like the bend down into the middle of the table, where the table is clearly split into two pieces held together by like tape so that the actress can just like hit it and it'll fall apart. Like it's noticeable.
I loved all those moments of displaying her strength because I couldn't help but be like, so clearly, you know, the way this is going is that eventually, you know, Vicky's gonna kill someone, right? Like, or like when, like, even when like they're like, oh, we gotta sabotage this vaudeville show And I'm like, so clearly they're going to take this too far one day, you know, 10 years down the line. And they're like, you know, Vicky's boss is going to find out about her. Oh, no, they're going to know she's a robot. And it's just like, well, Vicky's just going to have to take care of him. What a weird
is
fucking
Vicky
show.
Is Vicky the precursor to Lieutenant Commander Data on Star Trek The Next Generation?
I mean, I feel like Data could pass the Turing test. This child could not pass the
Turing
test.
Right, but it's a more primitive version of a similar type of character weird way.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge Star Trek Next Generation fan, but like, I feel like the exposure I had to Data, they did a good job of like, in this, I don't know if it's just all the actor, but like establishing that he was not human, but he was also likable and very, he had the right human warmth, but you could tell that he was not quite human.
Yeah, Brent Spiner's performance is how you do this.
Yeah. And again, yes. We don't blame Tiffany Brissett.
No, we don't.
Not her fault.
Not completely. I'm kidding. She's a child actress. It's not her fault. Not her fault. She's doing exactly, like, when you watch this, you know exactly what she's doing, and she's doing exactly what they wanted her to do.
Yeah, somebody, she's very
this was
committed.
Somebody's,
yeah.
Yeah, this was somebody's dream, you know, like, that's nailed it, you know?
I think, like, I read that Candace Cameron and Heather O'Rourke both auditioned for this part, and I can't picture Candace Cameron, like DJ Tanner, as this part.
She had too much attitude.
Yeah.
Did anyone else find the suitcase of doll parts at the beginning unsettling?
Oh, terrifying. Absolute terrifying.
Yeah, it was a real nightmare factory. And yeah. Like the fact that the family barely reacts to it, you're like, oh, this is not the first like suitcase of body parts this guy's brought home.
Speaking of terrifying, I was really worried about you, Barry, during the scene when they were in the department store because of that terrifying clown robot.
I did not like that clown. It really threw me for a loop.
Barry has a thing with clowns.
Okay. I do. It's true. Yeah.
That makes sense.
I was very worried about you. I thought
there will
about
be no,
you.
There will be no clown programming on this podcast.
There's also something about this show that almost feels like borderline conservative propaganda.
Yeah, for sure.
Even like the company that he works at to like make robots.
United Robotronics?
Yeah, but like the way his job is described and the way he dresses and the way he talks, it's like out of one of those old newsreels, like time marches on. And like through the majesty of industrial capitalism, we have created robots that will carry out all of our bidding.
I really like that he works that for a robot company, but when he pitches them a robot, like a lifelike robot, they're like, no, sir, I don't think so. Not here at United Robotronics.
Yeah. Yeah. But like they've got, you know, like it's like they're trying to create that perfect nuclear family from the like 50s, 60s mm-hmm. sort of propaganda. Even the fact that like, and I'll say speaking as an only child, the idea that it is just so like preposterous that this little boy be an only child. So this robot is the way that this family can conquer that otherwise like crucial narrative problem.
Yeah. It's, let's put it this way. It isn't preposterous when you see their relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, who's really the robot, Vicky or Ted? Because though every time he speaks, I'm just like, he seems like it's one of those characters where it's like an alien coming to Earth and pretending to be a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a Men in Black sort of thing, which, by the way, I need one of those like wands to like wipe my memory from this show.
That was a show.
We'll be right back after these messages. After these messages, we'll be right back. Hello, wonderful listeners and fans of this podcast. We want to hear from you. Go to anchor.fm/thatwasashow and leave us a voice message, and we might play it in a future episode. Or email us at thatwasashow@aol.com, our 90s era email address, and we might read your message.
Our lines are open, so call right now.
Well, yeah, I wonder about this whole weird obsession with giving Jamie a sibling. Is it, you know, is it that repeatedly Joan and Ted keep getting interrupted? Because did you notice that there are multiple scenes where they're like kind of getting like,
yeah, there's
amorous.
a lot of coitus interruptus going on.
Yeah. So like they can never actually have sex. So they have to like create a robot to have a second child. It's just like it's that horny parents trope again, because they are very horny at all times. There's always like these little stolen moments. Yeah.
Okay. So in the first episode, it's their 11th anniversary.
Yeah.
And like they, you know, Vicky and Jamie are making breakfast in bed for them. And like as soon as that scene starts, did everybody else just go, oh, the robot's going to walk in on them having sex? Because I was just like, that's exactly where this plot is going. And like, I just knew it the second they started. I was like, yes, the robot will. But then I was just like, they didn't even have like a robot not knowing what they're doing joke. Like it was just weird.
Oh.
So, Bryn, why don't you walk us through 6 degrees of Friends for Small Wonder?
Yeah, so this wasn't as straightforward as previous.
Yeah, because I feel like we're getting a little earlier on, and yeah, you know,
we're earlier on in our sort of era of sitcoms. It's mid 80s. Anyway, yeah, so you're right. We are like further away from Friends by, you know, a decade. but after quite a bit of like digging, basically I found two different connections, one 2 degree connection and one 3 degree connection. So I really wanted to link Small Wonder to Friends via Vicky the Robot, AKA Tiffany Brissett. So basically here it is. So Tiffany Brissett, who starred as Vicky the Robot on Small Wonder, had a reoccurring role in an iconic 80s sitcom, Webster.
Oh.
In which Mayim Bialik, who, you know, many know as Blossom and later Amy Farrah Fowler. Is that her name on that show? I don't know.
Something like that.
Anyway, also had a reoccurring role on Webster. Okay, so before she was Blossom, Mayim Bialik starred in a short-lived sitcom called Malloy with the young Jennifer Aniston. And then Jennifer Aniston was, of course, Rachel Green on Friends.
There you go.
So I think Malloy needs to go on the list as well.
Absolutely. Yes.
So that's 3 degrees. Okay, and so I found another connection, a 2 degree connection, via one of the directors, and I know we focus more on actors, but I wanted to spotlight a female director. So Linda Day, who directed 2 episodes of Small Wonder, was also a director for Top of the Heap. Which, you know, we had a little fun with last episode. Top of the Heap, of course, starred Matt LeBlanc, who later went on to be Joey Tribbiani on Friends.
There you go.
Amazing.
Hit us with the spinoff.
Right. So the spinoff was also very interesting, and I had a little more fun with it. Yeah. I don't know really how to put this, but the main stars of Small Wonder unfortunately really didn't do that much after Small Wonder. The only super prolific actor in the main family was Richard Dick Christie, who played Ted. He went on to do a lot of film and television, and specifically found a lot of success in the soap opera world, and played the role of Charlie Weber on The Bold and the Beautiful for 173 episodes. So he had a lot more success in that world. Now, the other interesting thing about Small Wonder is that a lot of the characters that were more minor characters were played by sort of a who's who of character actors. So most notably, you have Edie McClurg, who played Mrs. Brindle. Many people know her for...
He's a real righteous dude.
Exactly, exactly. So she played that role in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It was the secretary of the school office, and So she became very known as playing these very bubbly women characters, often named Helen, which is very funny.
She looks like a Helen.
Yeah, she does.
With a thick Minnesota accent.
Exactly. So she's always this very bubbly, cheerful character. If you see her photo, you see her in a scene, you've seen her in a million other things. She's a very delightful performer. But she went on to have more significant roles in shows like Valerie, Seventh Heaven, and she also did countless voiceover roles, including one that Aaron will appreciate. She voiced a character named Helen on The Life and Times of Tim.
I think I can picture the character, actually. That's great.
Yeah, it's funny. So there's also Alice Ghostly, who did 3 episodes of Small Wonder. She went on to co-star on Designing Women and Evening Shade, and she's a similar type to Edie McClurg, like a very, very specific kind of nervous energy lady in almost every bit of pop culture in the 80s and 90s. There was also William Bogert, who played Harriet's dad. He went on to do lots of television as well. He played 3 different characters on Law and Order, which is a very funny phenomenon. I don't know if you guys have ever noticed that, where the same actor will appear in multiple episodes of Law and Order, but playing a different person every time. So he did a few of those episodes, and he also had a funny reoccurring role on Chappelle's show as the newscaster.
Huh.
Which is very funny.
Amazing.
There are also quite a few young actors who many of us would recognize that were only in a couple of episodes each, but I just thought it was worth mentioning. There's Devin Odessa, who was in 2 episodes of Small Wonder. She went on to be Sharon on My So-Called Life. And I know there's a lot of you out there listening that are probably so-called life fans. There's also Lark Voorhees, who Woo! Went on to play Lisa Turtle on Saved by the Bell. She was in 2 episodes as well. Also, Brian Austin Green, who went on to play David Silver on 90210, was in 2 episodes.
Nice.
So I wonder if the 3 of them sort of joined a support group or anything, you know. Oh, I had my 2 episodes of that show.
By the way, did you look up the guy who played O'Connor?
I
did. He was a big actor. He was on Mama's Family.
Prolific.
There were a lot of Mama's Family people on that show. I also wanted to mention another like very significant actor who did 2 episodes of Small Wonder was Jo Marie Payton, who many of us know as Harriet Winslow on Family Matters.
Nice.
So it was quite an interesting journey going on that IMDb deep dive because there were a lot of talented performers in this show. And I really wonder about all of their experiences.
I was randomly reading that Tiffany Brissett is an RN now.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that as well. So she kind of left show business altogether. From what I read, one article, if anyone's like really curious, there's a pretty good article written for, it's like for yahoo.com, their entertainment section. It's called Small Wonder, The Strange True Story Behind the Weirdest Sitcom of the 80s. And it's written by Dave Nemitz from about September 2015. It's a fun read and it talks a lot about the behind the scenes tension and all the like weird tea basically from creating this show. And it sounds like it was kind of a fraught experience for the actors, and that Tiffany especially had a bit of a stage mom situation where she was, you know, pushed very hard. And so I'm glad to hear that she's now, you know, working as a nurse. But I think in that article, it also references the fact that she was kind of bullied quite a bit as she got older for being in this show. So that sucks, you know?
Really sad.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, this would have been a huge break for someone like her. And obviously she was quite talented and she embodied exactly what she was directed to do.
Oh, yeah.
But sadly, it was just too weird and off-putting for
an
people.
An even more successful show with a surrealist element that came out shortly after was, of course, ALF. And
yeah.
I've read about how apparently like the on-set dynamics of that show were really bad.
Yeah.
And lots of like heated feelings about the experience of making that show, partly because of how slow a process it was, apparently, dealing with like the elf. I guess it was sort of a costume, but like the whole process of shooting it made for very like long, exhausting shooting days and lots of like big egos.
And the thing that's really devastating about all of that is like, yes, it put actors through hell dealing with the visual effects and everything. The end result wasn't worth the trouble. The end results are rarely worth it. They're often shoddy.
The juice was not worth the squeeze.
Aw.
Elf is great. I know you guys are not fans. I love Elf. And I refuse to watch as an adult and ruin my
well, don't my watch it as an adult. It. Just do yourself a favor and don't watch it as an adult.
Elf was very big for me as a child.
Me too, but you know.
Another thing that Elf has in common with this show is immediately in the pilot explaining the acronym built into the name. So Vicky was a voice. What did you say it was?
Voice input. Child integrate.
Right. And Alf is, of course, alien life form. Alf.
Yeah, they loved those little cheeky acronyms back then.
Barry, you suggested that this is the kind of show Mr. Producer likely had a hand in. We should probably give him a call and find out if he has any insights on that.
Oh, absolutely. We should.
Hello!
Hello, Mr. Producer. Thanks for taking my call today.
Ah, Armin, my boy. Nice to hear from you.
Well, I won't take up too much of your time.
What are we talking about today?
Small Wonder.
Small Wonder? Oh, fantastic. One of my biggest hits, actually. Completely undervalued for the way it revolutionized network situation comedy programming.
How so?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. You know, with Small Wonder, we set out to ask one of life's biggest questions.
About the rise of artificial intelligence in modern society?
What? Oh, yeah, sure, that too. But really, what we had here was a bit of an experiment. Can you make a comedy without writing a single joke? Turns out, if you toss some big lines at some precocious kids and add a studio audience's laughter, you got a sitcom hit. I can't tell you how much time you save making a sitcom without worrying about it being funny.
Oh, yeah, I guess that would be time-consuming.
Anyways, it's fun to talk to you about these shows, but I gotta get going. I've got a call-in interview with Olive Aficionado Magazine in 5 minutes, and I gotta finish my prep.
Oh, well, thanks for talking to us today.
Let's see, there's Kalamata, Moroccan salt cured, manzanilla, canned...
Are there any leftovers?
It does baffle my mind that we did, you know, that this was 96 episodes, and I'm a little disappointed that I didn't grab an episode from later on in the series to see just what happens. But on the other hand, like, I just didn't care. I don't need to see more. I'm good with this.
I'm morbidly curious about later episodes, so maybe we do a part two, maybe we do a revisit if we have the strength and like fortitude to do that. But
I kind of wonder if any more robots ever come in, right? Like I want to see Vicky interact with another robot.
Apparently there's an evil twin or something. There's like an evil version of her.
Of course,
so
there is.
Maybe we'll revisit it. I just wanted to say that the set of like the house, the family house, I actually kind of liked. And the one thing I wanted to point out as a weird set design trope of the 80s is there's always a window seat in the house. Like there's always like a cushy window seat.
Which is weird because the very nature of a sitcom set means you're never going to shoot there because you can't see through the window. Yeah. There's nothing there.
Well, except when Harriet pops in and glares at them.
Oh, fuck yeah, you're right.
Actually, I have one thing that I'd like to add to the trope library. Maybe you guys can help me figure out how to name this, but it's using a school assembly or show of some sort as a major set piece for the payoff of a plot. We saw this in It's Your Move,
Yeah, with the dregs of humanity.
Yeah, and yep. I'm sure if we took a moment to think about it, we've probably seen this in many other shows, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was on Full House all the time, like Family Matters, like school assemblies were our big place, or school shows are big places of drama in sitcoms.
Yeah, like, and in sitcoms, like you pointed out, like there's like an agent there and they're doing a full rendition of Romeo and Juliet. But like that's part of the trope is that like school assemblies in sitcoms can have production values and running times and outside participants that have nothing to do with that school that are like so over the top.
Vicky does not go to that school and neither does that guy. So why were they allowed
concerned that who Vicky was and why she wasn't attending the school? Like,
I feel like she must be like the town's like worst kept secret. Like, yeah. They must be talking about her in hushed tones. Like, here's the robot that lives with that weird inventor.
Speaking of, just piggybacking on what you brought up, Aaron, I feel like doing a production of Romeo and Juliet is a trope as well. Because you see that in many, many different sitcoms.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do comedy writers like to see 9-year-olds delivering iambic pentameter?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, but the fact that there was like a full production of Romeo and Juliet in the middle of a talent show that also that only had two actors in it, but like, and they clearly reference that they're doing multiple scenes. So like, what the hell?
Boggles the mind.
Boggles the mind. Yeah, there's a Romeo and Juliet in Boy Meets World, I think.
Yeah. And didn't Topanga Lawrence sort of start out as an abhorrent admirer?
Yes. Yeah. Topanga is definitely an abhorrent admirer in the beginning, and that like, yeah, Corey doesn't want anything to do with her.
Yeah. And then she changes her entire personality and then he likes her.
Yeah.
Because she's really quirky and free-spirited in the first couple of seasons, and then she just becomes your normal average overachiever, goody, goody, goody two-shoes, and then he's like in love with her desperately.
Well, I mean, they're in love pretty much from the start. Mm-hmm. They kiss like as children on that show. Yeah. It's weird. It's weird. Anyways, we finished this like 28 minutes
ago. Let's just stop. Stop while we're ahead.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. Until next time. That Was a Show is created and hosted by Bryn Burney, Andrew Barry Helmer, and myself, Aaron Yeager. It's a production of Radio Gizmo in Toronto, Canada. Subscribe, rate, review, and share. Follow us on Instagram and tell your friends about it. That Was a Show?
Radio Gizmo.